Did you know in the first post-COVID research published on summer learning that it was found that children involved in math-focused summer programs tend to score higher on standardized math tests and have higher math grades than other students? This is the year we follow the research and join the growing number of schools that are ordering Summer Pops math workbooks for their kids. Summer Pops is an easy, low-cost, and effective summer math program designed for elementary and middle schools. Summer Pops is not an app. It requires zero screen time for our kids. Many of our listeners have already ordered Summer Pops for this year, giving their students the leg up that they need and giving their parents the support they want. You can visit summerpopsworkbooks.com/research to view the studies yourself and then request your free sample books. See firsthand why more schools are providing Summer Pops for their students. That's summerpopsworkbooks.com. Principal Matters Podcast, episode 386. Hi, friends. This is Will Parker, host of Principal Matters, the School Leaders Podcast, where each week we bring you inspiring, innovative, and imaginative ideas for your own school leadership. This week, we're going to talk about connecting every student to caring adults with my special guest, Melissa Barlow. Melissa Barlow is in her 11th year as principal of Yukon High School in Yukon, Oklahoma. And in the past two decades as an educator, she has taught both middle level and high school science and math, as well as served in the role of assistant principal and now principal. Barlow obtained her bachelor's degree from Oklahoma State University and a master's in education administration from the University of Central Oklahoma. And as a former alumnus of Yukon High School, she is honored to serve her hometown community with a focus on individual student success through educator collaboration. Her focus on building relationships has established a rich culture and climate that values the success of all students. And in 2021, Melissa Barlow was named the Oklahoma High School Principal of the Year. She has presented on topics such as developing school culture, individualized intervention, and post-secondary preparation. And she's a dear friend. Melissa Barlow, welcome to Principal Matters Podcast. Why don't you fill in the gaps on that intro and tell listeners something else they may be surprised to know about you?
Thank you, Will, for having me. It's exciting to be on. One of the things I think that I'm most excited about, and I tell people all the time, is I've actually been at Yukon High School since I was 14 years old. And so I tease the kids all the time, watch out, it's a vortex, it'll suck you in. So I've been a couple of places in between there, but for the most part, I grew up here and was super blessed to come back and teach and be an administrator here in our community. And it's just such an exciting place to be. We're a one high school town. And that would be the exciting fact. You know, those sometimes in to find a one high school large district is hard to find, but it's just super special because our kids K through 12 are Yukon Millers. I know that's another exciting thing. A Yukon Miller, probably nobody knows what that is. But we're excited as part of our grain mill here and our rich heritage to be the Yukon Millers. And so I'm proud to lead our school and a school that really led me in the direction of becoming an educator.
Well, you are a part of an education family. Your husband is an administrator. You've had two children come through your school. So you have to be both the principal and the mom. I know somebody else who knows about the Yukon Millers, and that's Garth Brooks, because he's from there. You probably went to school with Garth, I'm going to guess.
I was a little bit younger than Garth, but my favorite story about Garth Brooks, my fourth grade teacher went to school with Garth Brooks. She was brand new to teaching. And I remember she told us about her friend who had written music and was singing in his cassette. His single cassette was available at Walmart. And so I went home and told my mom, we must have this single cassette of this guy named Garth Brooks. And so we went to the local Walmart and my mom bought me the single cassette of Garth Brooks' first release song. I don't remember what it was, but I'm sure it was great. And it has been history ever since.
It's probably I've Got Friends in Low Places or something
probably.
Like that.
But,
oh, it's so fun. Well, for those of us from Oklahoma, we love to talk about Garth Brooks. He also moved and raised his kids in this town where we live in Owosso, Oklahoma. And so everyone has their claim to Garth at some point in the great state of Oklahoma. I have been in your school, Melissa, and thank you for the privilege of walking your building with you. I've also known you through the work that you and I did together with our State Principals Association, where you serve as the state. You're currently the president of the Oklahoma Association of Secondary School Principals. You are a former Oklahoma High School Principal of the Year. And I want to hear a little bit, I want listeners to hear a little bit more about your school. I've been there. And so I've had the joy of walking such a beautiful campus and building. But tell us a little bit more about UConn High School, some of the programs you guys offer, the kinds of students that you're serving. And let's begin there.
Sure. So UConn High School, as of this year, we're the sixth largest high school in the state of Oklahoma. We sit right under 3,000 students. Our school sits on a beautiful 150-acre piece of property. We've been here for 13 years. One of the most exciting things at the time that this school was built, it was due to a huge community support. The largest bond issue in state history at the time was passed to build our beautiful 350,000 square foot school building, which we are quickly outgrowing, but we're excited to keep expanding. One of the things that I think I'm most proud about at UConn, as far as programs go, would be the fact that we have a partnership with Southwestern Oklahoma State University. And so our students currently can take courses through them on our campus, but we are getting ready to build a college and career center on the back piece of our property. We have a little bit of property that's been undeveloped on our current property, and we're building a college and career center there. And so oftentimes we think about high schools and we think about freshman academies, but we're kind of going in reverse or opposite of that. And so we are building a college and career center. And so our kids will be able to have their college coursework out there. They'll be able to meet with their representative from Southwestern out there. We'll also house many STEM programs out there. And so really excited to kind of take that kind of what would be kind of a traditional offset of a group of students and really put our older kids out there and provide them with some opportunities and really some structures where they can take some courses in a lecture hall setting, obviously not as big as some colleges, but some larger lecture hall settings and things like that. That's really important to me that our kids get to experience some of that before they go on and do their work post-secondary. And so we're excited about that at UConn. As far as our programs go, we obviously offer a wide variety of things, but one of the things that I'm most excited about is the fact that we really take into consideration what our kids are looking for and what the workforce is looking for, and then meld those two things together to build and create programs. So we always talk about here, I am not afraid to try new things. And so we're always changing and finding what works for our kids, but also the workforce. So we want to be able to prepare kids for the workforce in Oklahoma and beyond. And so we're taking and building and developing those things often.
With approximately 3,000 students, Melissa, and I also know you have about 186 teachers, because you and I have talked about your school offline as well. One of the reasons that I wanted to bring you in is I've been talking about you in other episodes, because I'll often talk about how do leaders, whether they're in small settings or large settings, make sure that every student is connected to a caring adult. And I know you're a data person, so you and I have talked a lot about this, and I've seen you present on this, but one of the things I would love for you to talk about is how did you create what you call your SOS program? Tell us about that program and how it's been beneficial for your school community.
Sure. So it actually started with a former UConn graduate. His name's Josh Shipp, and he is a youth motivational speaker, has a show on, and he talks about I got sent a YouTube video where he talks about being one caring adult away from being a success story. The exciting thing is the person that he's talking about, his caring adult, was my former eighth grade U.S. history teacher and an administrator in our district. But it really hit home with me. And this was actually prior to my own kids being in my school. And so just thinking about that, every kid that goes through here in the 3,000, that there's somebody's kid and they're really close to being successful, but we've got to connect kids to people. I talked a little bit about programs a second ago, and programs are very, very important. But it's more than connecting a kid to a program. We know that kids that are involved are really successful, but it's about connecting kids to people. And so I really set out in search of some opportunity for our school, a large school, to take a large group of teachers and a large group of kids to ensure that every kid, 100% of our kids, were connected to an adult. Obviously, that was going to be at different levels, but that every kid was connected. That's how the SOS list was born. I certainly didn't create the whole thing. I begged and borrowed and stole from different areas to make something that worked for us. But it was something, and it was a system. So I'm super data driven, and it was just if I said 100, then it was going to be 100, and it was a system that we created that we allowed us to ensure that every kid was connected.
I want you to talk about how that looked when you began, because I was in your building when you took me into your, I don't know what you call that room by your office, but it's like your own classroom where you pull in teachers and you guys do PD together. And there were names on every, I'll let you explain it, but then I want you to tell us where you began. And then I want you to tell us how that looks now.
So at first I was like, this definitely needs to be, as a former math and science teacher, I was super interactive. This is going to be an interactive opportunity. And so the conference room that sits just right off of my office is our classroom. It's our teacher's classroom. It's where we do our work every day. And so I took and I printed off, and it was a lot of pages because I think there was only 15 names per piece of paper. I know I wanted room for the teachers to be able to write next to it. And so I printed out pieces of paper that contained every kid's name in our school. And I hung them up literally from floor to ceiling, it was like wallpaper, really, mm-hmm. all around the whole room where every kid had a blank next to their name. And then we're meeting in PLCs in that room. And so we do that on a regular basis, weekly, in fact. And so as the teachers came in, at that time, the SOS list, I was a little vague on describing what it meant to be connected to a kid. So back then it was, hey, do you know something about this kid outside of school? If you do, write your name next to that kiddo. And so we did that process. The whole time we've been doing this, we've done it where we kind of do it in waves, do a first round, then maybe a second round, and then, you know, our final round of that. But at first it was just, do you know anything about this kid outside of school? Do they work at Taco Bell? Do they have a brother or sister or whatever it might be?
I'm not interrupting you.
No,
but
you're okay.
No. No, keep going, because I know you have different levels. So that's level one. So continue.
So that's level one. And so what I did what started coming of that is, so let me go back to, the three rounds. So we do a first round then, and that usually occurs around after Labor Day. I try to do it about a week after Labor Day. Then about 3 weeks later, we do a second round. And then for that third round, what I do is I take the list. Even back then in those days, like I literally was taking the list because I took it off the wall. And we talk about assigning those kids out, connecting them to somebody. Because if we're going to get to 100%, we're going to have to do some work, right? We're going to have to ask teachers to step outside their comfort zone and reach out to a kid who may be the quiet kid in the back of the room, or a kid that only comes to class every so many days. And so what I found was that when I was asking teachers to do that work, they were saying, well, how much do I need to know about this kid? How can I dive in? Well, I know a lot about that kid. And so teachers, can I write my name twice? Because I know a lot. Can I circle the kid's name? I know a lot about that kid. That's where the levels developed. So I tried to base this kind of on instructional supports, tier one, tier two, tier three instructional supports. I thought that's in our verbiage, right? Like that's the work we talk about all the time. So what I've developed basically is a tier one teacher is just what we originally talked about. You just know something about that kid outside of school. You've talked to him in the last week, you know, just kind of a basic level. Tier two is you know a little bit more about that kid. You kind of understand where maybe they're at in their life. You've spent some time with them that you talk to them more frequently. They're a kid that you're a little more in-depth connected to, tier two. And then the tier three teacher. And this is where we've really built this robust program off of this. And so the tier three teacher is at its core, that teacher is that kid's safe space. Whether that kid is in that teacher's class or the teacher's connected with him from a year previous, but that teacher knows about that kid. And what I ask the teacher, if you're going to write your name, so now the list, I should stop and say this, now the list is digital. It's on Google Drive, because let us just talk about the wallpaper. That was a little much. So now we're Google driving it. And so we've got our list and we've got three columns, tier one, tier two, and tier three. And so what I tell the teachers, if you're going to put your name on tier three, then you need to know some more in-depth stuff about this kiddo. You need to know what their academic performance is, not just in your class, but in other classes. You need to be their safe space. But also what we ask of that teacher is for them to maybe possibly know what that kid's calming mechanisms, calming strategies are, what their triggers are. What's the best way to go about visiting with that kid or handling that kid in a tough situation? And so what we've found is that now that list is honestly, it's about helping the kids, but it's about helping us as administrators and other teachers. Oftentimes, if we've got a kid in the office that's really having a tough time and we're just not able to connect with them, I'll pull that list up. I'll see if they have a tier three teacher. If they do, I'm calling that person. Hey, Mrs. Smith, can you come down here? I have so-and-so in my office and I really could use your help. Or I may be asking them at another time, but I've called them on a whim. Like, can I get you a class cover? Can you please come help? And it's amazing because that teacher walks in and has a calming effect on that kid or knows that kid's triggers or knows, can tell me more. With 3,000 kids, I don't know everything about every kid. My administrative team, I have 6 assistant principals. We don't know everything about every kid. We try to work on that, but we really use our team of teachers to guide that work. And so that's one of the most exciting things about the SOS list developing over time is it's become now a resource for us as administrators, for counselors, for other teachers as well.
There's just so much.
One of the things I was going to also just, I was going to just throw one more thing in there really quick about the tier three. Sometimes when I talk about the SOS and share the process, every kid does not have a tier one, tier two, and tier three teacher. So our goal is 100% of our kids have at least one of those spots filled, a tier one, two, and three. What we do though is encourage teachers, if you're the kid's tier one teacher, by this point in the year, which is December, we'll say by December, we encourage you to move from tier one to tier two or tier two to tier three. We're actually in the process right now. We just finished our second round. So over fall break, what I'll do is I'll sift through the list and see who still doesn't have a tier one, two, or three teacher. And then I'll look at their course schedule and figure out a teacher that I know would be great at building a relationship with them and start reaching out to those teachers, asking them to spend, I don't know, you guys have probably all heard the 2x10 strategy. So to spend 2 minutes with a kid for 10 straight days to get to know them. That was not my idea. I took it from somewhere. It's a great strategy. So it's a good to offer that up to teachers. And so I'll say, hey, can you do the 2x10 with these three kids? It's great because I will tell you this, what I've heard back from teachers is that it fills their bucket too. And I think that that's one of the best things that we can get out of this in addition to all the great things we're doing with kids. So really we look for 100%. So I will start sifting through that list, start reaching out to teachers. Once they feel like they've made that tier one connection with the kid, they'll go and they'll put their name on that. So I'll look at it over fall break. And then we're getting ready to go into fall break here. And then I'll spend some time between now and Thanksgiving break. So this fall time doing that work. And then we'll look to fill that and greet those kids and meet those kids and build those relationships by the time we go to winter break.
So let's pause, Melissa, and I want to summarize her a little bit for listeners. When you put together your SOS program and you guys have almost 3,000 kids, your goal was to make sure that every student was connected to at least one teacher in one of those tiers. So tier one would be, I know who this kid is. Yep. Tier two would be, I actually know things about this kid. Tier three is I'm a safe place for the student. And obviously your goal would be for every kid to get there, and you know you won't, but the goal is to make sure that every kid has at least one of those. And now I've seen your digital list. You have that color coded. Yeah. I think, is it yellow? Is it yellow, green, red? How do you color code that?
Yeah. So the red is the tier one and we're getting to the green, which is tier three. And then the yellow is in the middle.
So you've got red, yellow, green. Yes. So for listeners who are visual and not audio, because we're talking, you're hearing this podcast. I'm going to, at the end of today's episode, give you an opportunity to connect with Melissa, to contact her if you want to reach out and see some samples of what that looks like, because it is impressive. Okay, because I also know that your work extends in so many directions, Melissa. And you and I talked about this off the air a little bit too. This idea of connecting with every student or creating an SOS, does the SOS stand for something?
Save our students.
Okay, save our students. Let's take a moment to thank our sponsors, and then we'll be right back. Why is IXL used in 95 of the top 100 U.S. school districts? Because it works. Research across 45 states showed that IXL schools outperform other schools on state tests. With IXL, you get a personalized online learning and teaching solution that helps you improve achievement, empower teachers, track progress, and more. This one platform for K-12 helps teachers accomplish what normally would require dozens of other tools. For example, as students practice skills, IXL automatically adapts to ensure each learner is always supported and challenged at the right level. IXL also provides every student with a personalized learning plan to help them close knowledge gaps effectively. One of my favorite things about IXL is their personalized test prep tool. For exams like the SAT and ACT, IXL will analyze a student's most recent score and generate a custom list of skills to help them boost their scores. If you want to take the load off of your teachers so they can do their best work, IXL can help. Learn more at IXL.com/PM today. And so you and I were talking before this recording about how you've actually begun targeting your connections with your teachers, and you don't call it your SOS program for teachers, but since this audience is leaders, aspiring leaders in education, can you talk a little bit about some of the ways that you have become intentional in those teacher relationships, just as you guys have as a school been intentional in the student relationships?
Yeah. And so this really kind of happened organically. So it wasn't something that I set out to, okay, well, if the teachers are going to do this, then I need to do this as a leader. It was actually just as I was kind of crafting my goal for the year and something that I wanted to focus on. For me as a leader, I wanted to focus on teacher retention. And, you know, we've seen a lot of teachers come and go in education in general, but I really wanted to focus on teacher retention. And in really researching and reading up on that, I knew that teachers needed to have connections to administrators in schools and really get their questions answered and all of that. So I set out to create, and I did this really unintentionally, but was to create a list of all of our teachers and try to mark down or track my positive touch points with those teachers. And that positive touch point, I didn't want to be held to like, that needs to be a face-to-face meeting or, you know, so I've been trying to do any positive touch point, a note that I've written them, an email, or just stopping and seeing them in the hallway, or an intentional meeting that I've had with them. And so I just created a list of our teachers. Of course, there's 186 of them. There's a lot. And so looking at those teachers, and teachers and other staff as well, but for that total there, but making sure that I was being intentional with the opportunity to have those positive touch points with them, because if I'm focusing on teacher retention, then I need to do that work. And so I was actually just thinking about it. Like I made the same spreadsheet and I kind of just recently had the aha of, oh, wait, I think I just made an SOS list for the teachers. So I don't know if we call it an SOT list or whatever it might be, but just really tracking that work. I believe that what we set out to do and our goals and what we track gets done. And when we do this intentionally, we can just, the rewards are huge. And so I'm really working on this year, my own personal goal as a leader is to connect with teachers in that way.
What I love about that, Melissa, is again, your intentionality with your students, your teachers. You and I were talking before the show started about the work that I've been doing. And I'm just going to set the context for listeners that we're recording this in the fall. You probably, as listeners, won't hear this until the spring because I have so many of my guests now banked for this work. And Melissa, you've known me for a long time since I was a principal and worked at the State Association and then the work I've done with Principal Matters. But before we jumped on, I was just sharing some of my numbers with you too, because in my virtual trainings, I have over 117 leaders that I'm connecting with consistently in my in-person trainings because of events that could be, you know, over 1,500 people. In my podcast, I have, you know, 10,000 downloads happening a week. And so but all of those numbers I just said to you, I actually did not even have those in my brain until this morning when I was sitting down trying to pull it all the data into some place for me to wrap my mind around who am I serving, and what are the numbers? And so why is it important for you to look at the data connected to the people? And then how do you bring that full circle to make sure that you're keeping the people in all of the, especially the large numbers that you deal with?
You know, I think that that is how we know that the work that we're holding ourselves accountable to the work that we've committed to. And so I think, you know, data just is something that's come natural to me and something that I just really value. I'm very competitive. And so I love setting goals for, I'm even competitive with myself. I love setting goals for our staff to be able to see where we're at. But I will say what's important about the data is when we look back at that, it gives us an opportunity for reflection. You know, oftentimes education can be draining. I mean, it can really be a draining job. It takes a lot, but I think that's how we rejuvenate ourselves. I rejuvenate myself by looking at the data, and I thought people think, really, lady, like you got to find another way to rejuvenate yourself. But it, when I look back at it and go, look at the work we've been able to do, I can go back and pull up SOS lists digitally, the ones we've had digitally for the past, probably, I think we've been doing it digitally for about 7 years. And so with that being said, I can go back and see the work that we're doing. I can show people the positive work that we've done and kind of the end result, and we can connect those two. But I think it's so important, just like you putting together your data, you can see the work that you've done and in one place. You know what you've done. You've been busy, right? But when I can go back and look at my calendar or in my teacher touch point list and see that the work that I'm doing is leading to that goal, I think that's where we fill our buckets as leaders and be able to kind of rejuvenate ourselves to want to do the work.
Okay, I'm going to pause there for a second because someone's listening to this that may need to hear this repeated. In the work that we do, and I don't care how long you've done it, or how experienced you've been, or even how accomplished you might feel, it is easy to get to the end of a day and ask that question, did I make a difference? Am I making an impact? Am I adequate for the work that's in front of me? Because we can doubt that work, the impact of that work pretty quickly, especially without perspective. And so the co-host that sits on the show with me often, Jen Schwanke, will say sometimes it's important to just give yourself permission to update your resume. You know, take a look at like, what have I been doing and what am I doing now that, and you said this to me, Melissa, too, you know, just going through your calendar and refreshing your memory on, okay, these are the things that I've been doing to touch students, to work with families, to, and so I just want to give Principal Matters listeners permission right now to just pause for a second, review the last month that you've gone through, and then just stop for a moment and accept the fact that you're making a difference. And if you can look back at this last month and go through your calendar and you saw no place in there where you're connecting with teachers and students, then you might need to reprioritize. But I'm going to guess that the impact that you're making every single day is significant, even if you haven't had an opportunity to have that perspective. Anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah. And so I do want to add something. And so what I try to always look at my calendar, and so I'm really calendar driven, and I know I've shared that with the folks in our state association as well, but I have always lived by kind of the saying of does my calendar reflect the leader that I want to be, and I really, I mean, it's scheduled from the time I get here till the time I leave, and so I really schedule that work in there. I will schedule time to review the SOS list. I'll schedule time to send it out. I'll schedule time to look at it. And I'll schedule these touch points with my teachers. But I think that when we go back and look, and that reflection time, like you talked about, is super important. So definitely give yourself permission to go back and look at your calendar, see the work that you've done, but also use that time as a reflection moving forward. Like if you didn't see what you wanted to see, look forward at your calendar and go, does what I have planned for the next month actually reflect where I want to be as a leader and how I want to grow as a leader? And I think that we are the writers of our own calendar. And so for the most part, there's things, you know, that we have to do, but for the most part, we get to decide what goes on there and what takes precedence.
So I want to pretend for a moment, Melissa, that you, and we've known each other for a long time. So I know that when you were recognized as UConn, as the Oklahoma High School Principal of the Year, and I've had recognitions too. That doesn't mean that we've arrived, but it does mean that you've had experiences and successes with your students and your population that have been noteworthy. But I want you to pretend for a moment that you're sitting down for coffee with a young administrator, or maybe someone who's an aspiring leader who's stepping into this work. And they would, even though you could give them the textbook of here are the things that you should be thinking of as you step in, what would be the one or two things that you would say to an aspiring or a newer leader to keep in mind so that they can hold on to those priorities?
And, you know, I'm a big believer. So in a large school, we lead a team, you know, so I lead a team of six assistant principals and, you know, those people come and go, because that's my job as a leader, for them to move on to lead their own buildings. But one of the things that I really do talk to them about is scheduling time to do the work that's important to you. And I think that that is just key. If you want to get into classrooms, beyond needing to get into classrooms, but if you want to get into classrooms and want to spend time with kids, if you want to do the things, that put those in your calendar. The needs also go in there, the things that need to be done. But I really am a firm believer in the calendar system. I know we talked about that just a little bit ago, but I think it's so much more than just having a calendar and having things scheduled. It really is saying to yourself, self, these are the things I value, and this is what I want to spend my time doing. And, you know, it's okay that we have a full scheduled day. Now, you know, there's things that can be changed when emergencies come up, of course, but I always talk to my brand new assistant principals about scheduling time in their day for the things that they want to do as they better themselves towards their goal of instructional leadership or whatever it might be. But also the things that need to get done, because what gets scheduled gets done. And it's that good, healthy reminder to fill our day with the work that's important. And sometimes that means taking some time for ourselves too, and taking time. We get our assistant principal team, our administrative team, we schedule birthday lunches, and that's just a non-negotiable. When it is one of our birthdays, we schedule the birthday lunch, and it's scheduled in the calendar, and there are no emergencies really that trump that. And we devote that hour 7 times a year to spending time together, to eating lunch together. And so it's little things like that, but I think that the scheduling makes all the difference.
That's so good, Melissa. I'm just thinking of an analogy, so I'm going to use it. Because I know a lot of leaders, if they have an opportunity, for instance, to travel, to go to a conference, to schedule an event that they're presenting at or they're attending, they work really hard to get that on the calendar, to purchase their tickets, to schedule things in advance, to push everything else off that's going to keep them from doing that, to get up super early the morning of, so they can be there. They've communicated to their team, hey guys, I'm not going to be there today, so because here's the priority that's happening. And the question that I want to ask is, like, why don't we do that for other things that are important to us? You know, why don't we, like you're saying, if we really do value the relationships with people in our building, why aren't we scheduling and valuing time with those relationships? So birthday lunches, that's such a good example of that. But also classroom instruction, time with student advisement. And again, I know when I'm saying these things, there's principals listening that'll be like, yeah, that sounds great. But when I'm in the building, I can't ignore the fire, or I can't always put it. And I know you know that too. So I'm back at the coffee table with you, Melissa. Talk to me a little bit about that response, which is, well, how do I keep those things a priority when all these things are flooding, coming towards me that push me off my schedule?
So we talk about that a lot, and I always use the word non-negotiables. Like, what are the non-negotiables? And of course, there's emergencies that arise and things like that. But I will tell you, on our team, we define emergency. We define non-negotiables, and I think that those, we're just really open. I think, you know, Brené Brown talks about clear is kind. And so we developed collective commitments with our administrative team where we define emergencies. We define the space that we'll be meeting in. And then I encourage them to do that themselves as well. And so they understand what is, you know, when do we need to do supervision and what trumps that? Because there's not a lot that trumps passing period supervision with 3,000 kids. And so we actually It was about 2 weeks ago. We actually met again. We meet frequently, but in one of our meetings, we met and we talked about the fact that we needed to recommit to that. We had let some other things come into our non-negotiable list of reasons that would trump those things. And so I think that's the conversation where you have to have either with your administrative team or yourself. And I write everything down. So we have a list of collective commitments. We have those things written down. We understand what comes before, what is an emergency, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like, what is an emergency? And so we meet every Monday morning, our administrative team. And during that time, we know what's an emergency, and we let our secretaries know. They know, we're clear with them. You do not radio, do not call unless these things are happening. And so I think we just have to be honest with folks about what we're doing and why we need to meet. We're not in here just eating bonbons. We're having an important meeting to talk about, you know, what we're doing. The other thing that our team has valued is that instructional time where we are in evaluations and observations. And so we, in our group text message, we text each other when we're going to be going into a classroom. That is the signal for, you know, all hands on deck. If one of my students, you know, our principals are divided by alphabet. So if one of their students misbehaves, we've got a text message that says that that principal is in an evaluation, and we value that. Our teachers depend on us to be there to watch the work that they're doing. And so one of us will step in and take care of that kid during that situation. So we talk about that a lot. And I think that I would encourage new folks to do that, to decide what are the emergencies? What are the non-negotiables?
What I love about that too, Melissa, is the wisdom in those collective commitments is that you're having the conversations on the front end of what you're, so that you can anticipate what's going to be happening in advance. So we've already committed to how we're going to respond in advance to that. I'm thinking of a leader that I was working with a few weeks ago in one of our virtual trainings, and a middle school principal, and she shared a document of those collective commitments that she and her staff had put together. And she would host during planning periods, groups of teachers in each hour when they needed to revisit collective commitments, because if maybe there's some things happening around the school that are starting to be distractions, or people are avoiding, or people are no longer paying attention to. And so I was just really impressed with the forward thinking that she had, which is, okay, just like a good classroom teacher has to revisit the norms in this classroom, I have to revisit as a leader with my team. What are the collective commitments that we have for our staff? So much wisdom. I want listeners who are listening to this, who would love to see your SOS examples or just connect with you as a leader and a friend, Melissa, to be able to find you. So how can listeners connect with you? And what are any parting words of wisdom that you'd like to share before we go?
Yeah, so I would welcome anybody to email me and reach out. And so you can email me at our school. And so it's melissa.barlow@uconps.com. Please reach out. You can also go to our website, which is YHS for Yukon High School, .uconps as in public school.com. And you can connect with me there. And so please reach out with any questions. But I would just really say, like, the work that you're hearing me talk about, please know that I've been in this position for a decade. And so it's developed over time. And so any listeners out there who are new administrators know that these things don't happen overnight. They're trial and error, and to really take what you hear, but make it your own, make it work for you. Don't think that just because you see my SOS list, that's, you know, something that's going to work perfectly for you. I heard about different things and kind of developed it to work for us, but always be on the lookout, go to conferences, attend professional development, and listen for things, but listen with an ear of how could you get it to work for your school. And so I think that would be something that I always try to encourage administrators to go out and listen, but listen with not how can I do that exactly, but how could it work for my school, and really to kind of dive into that work and know that the work you're doing matters to kids every day.
Well, Melissa Barlow, thank you for the opportunity to connect you with our listeners. Just for full disclosure, you and I have tried a couple of different times to jump into conversation and record, and sometimes the work of school makes that hard to do. And so I just want to thank you for taking the time today in the middle of learning. And I know you're going to step away from this call, just like every other principal, and immediately step back into that work of caring for others. But thank you for your leadership. Thank you for what you're doing for UConn. Thank you for sharing those ideas with other leaders. And Principal Matters listeners, I just want to encourage you, as you think about those students in your care, how can you connect every student, every teacher, every day with someone who cares? Until next time, thanks for doing what matters. We'll talk to you again soon. Find free resources like this one at williamdparker.com. Subscribe for our free weekly newsletter, which contains bonus material, and also check out the links for Grow Academies, Masterminds, Executive Coaching, and Keynote Presentations for my books, as well as for Principal Matters Associates. You can find out more under our speakers tab at williamdparker.com. Thank you for learning together, and thank you for doing what matters.